Good morning and welcome to Back Chat. I'm Jenny Lam and my co-presenter today is Janice Wong. Good morning, Janice.
Good morning.
On Back Chat today, we're looking at life expectancy and the quality of life of older people in Hong Kong. A Chinese university study has found that people here are living longer than ever before. Hong Kong people now live on average up to 87 years old. That's according to data used in the study back in 2020 and compared to 83.3 years back in 2007. But more elderly people are now living with disabilities. Researchers found that the proportion of lives spent with disability for adults aged 65 years and above in Hong Kong increased by around 5%. So how does Hong Kong compare to the rest of the world? What can we do to live longer, not only longer, but also healthier? And after 9:45 this morning, we'll discuss animal welfare. That's after a teacher was sentenced to 240 hours of community service for animal cruelty. So let us know what you think. You can leave us a message on our Facebook page, email us at backchat@rthk.hk or call us on 233-88-266. And joining us on Backchat this morning, we have Dr. Samuel Kwok. He's the president of the Association of Private Medical Specialists Hong Kong of Hong Kong. Good morning, Dr. Kwok.
Good morning.
Morning.
Also with us is Jean Wu. She's an Emeritus Professor of Medicine at the Faculty of Medicine at Chinese University. And she's also the director of the university's Jockey Club Institute of Aging. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Morning.
Good morning. Professor Wu, let's go to you first. Can you tell us what are the key findings of your study?
Yep. We usually talk about healthy aging. I mean, the United Nations talk about the current decade of healthy aging. The common perception is that healthy aging equals absence of chronic disease. But the thinking is that health is beyond just diseases, to emphasize on function, that is cognitive function, physical function, so that you become independent. So that there is a ratio, so being healthy life expectancy and total life expectancy. And Hong Kong, like other developed countries, the trend is that we're living longer, but many studies have shown that we are not increasing the health span, as it were, as much. So the implication is huge, because not only are the absolute numbers of older people higher, but the number of people who can't look after themselves also increases. So I think that we cannot deal with this problem just from a health service point of view. It has to be whole of society. And the other thing that is really notable is that the there's a socioeconomic gradient. That is, you're more likely to live with disability if you're lower in lower socioeconomic status. And also, if you're a woman, that's quite dramatic, that the lifespan has increased, but the health span has increased very little. So, yeah. So right. Those are the major things that we need to tackle.
Right. And Professor Wu, you mentioned the concept of healthy life expectancy. I mean, what is this and why is it so important?
Yeah. So everybody wants to live a long life, but everybody also wants to be independent and not depend on other people for care. How do you measure that? And so this is the concept of function. Whatever disease you have, if your brain works, if you can move around, you can go to the toilet and wash yourself, that's the goal. That's what we all aim for.
When you talk about disability free, so you're talking about using the bathroom without help. But can you tell me in this study what are some of the disabilities that these people are suffering from?
Yeah, so this study actually just uses government data. Sporadically before this study, we have specifically measured. Specific measures. So let me just answer your question about disability. So this is data collecting from the census. So if you go back to the census questions, there are some questions that ask whether you can self-care, ability for self-care, so very few. But throughout the years, different academics have looked at specific activities of daily living. So can you feed yourself? Can you dress yourself, brush teeth, toileting, bathing, go out shopping, and these things as activity of daily living. And then another thing that we measure is frailty. That this is like frailty by itself is an aging phenomenon. So you walk slower, your brain doesn't work too well. And frailty by itself, in the absence of whatever chronic diseases, increases mortality, increases use of health services like outpatient and hospitals. So there are various measures. But in that particular study, we only use what is available in the public domain, that is in what's collected in the census.
Yeah, let's go to Dr. Samuel Kwok. Now, you were the Association of Private Medical Specialists. What are the implications for both private and public healthcare sectors?
This has a very important impact on the services. First of all, people live longer, and that's a good thing. And of course, people tend to get disease when they're older in their age, when they're aging. Those diseases are more likely to be chronic diseases. And if those diseases are not killing the person, and the state people live on, and they might have residual disability. So that's what we are seeing, actually demonstrated from the study shown by the COHK.
Yeah.
So this has a big impact on society, on the healthcare system, and not just healthcare system. As you know, when people have disability, we need people to take care of them. They're not able to take care of themselves. Daily activities are not good. Quality of life is not good. So we don't just have big impact on the medical services itself. It also have quite a big burden on carer services and helping social assistance in those people.
Does it surprise you that more women than men are living these older life with disability?
I think the gender differences is a little bit of a surprise, because there should not be a big difference in terms of gender, having disease, having disability in the population. But you talk about the socioeconomic differences, perhaps that is kind of could be expected in society like Hong Kong, because if you are not as wealthy as the other person, then maybe you have a problem in access of care. Services in Hong Kong, both medical and other services.
Right. And Professor Wu, on that point, I know your study also suggested that differences in life expectancy and disability-free life expectancy across the districts in Hong Kong, there are differences. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
It's been known for a long time that there's social determinants of health, and income, occupation, wealth is obviously one measure. The different districts are a very rough surrogate of socioeconomic position. They're not very accurate. They're more accurate data, which is not available in the public domain. But how do you get to be, whether you're healthy or not, it's a life course thing. So if you're wealthy, you have the best care, you have growing up, you have all the advantages, best education and the jobs and less stress. And if you have diseases, maybe you can afford a different kind of treatment, different rehabilitation, which is not very available in the public sector these days. And then as you get older, maybe you can afford to have to employ somebody to help you. So even if you have some difficulties, maybe you can get somebody to help you go out and so on. So that is still maintaining function, right? But if you don't have money, you cannot afford these things. So there's obviously a gradient based on how much money, how much resource you have, and also education. But education alone, without money, is not going to help either, not going to help much. It is a suggestion, it's an indicator, and I think that we may need to have better indicators of the social gradient so that we could tackle this problem. I think the government, to a certain extent, has been doing that all along in the way that they have special various allowances for people in the lower income group, various types of allowances and vouchers, daycare vouchers. But it's just not enough. It's not enough to meet the demand. So this is the function, but the rehabilitation bit is also a problem with cannot meet demand, right? I mean, the public sector have rehabilitation programs and so on, but because they're so short of beds, your rehabilitation period to optimize your function, let's say after a stroke, could be 1 year. But then in the public sector, we're talking about a few weeks. Now, the private sector also, they have limitations. So maybe in the community, we ought to develop more of this. Now, if you have money, you can pay when you go home to go to a rehabilitation section of the various private sectors. So I think there are all these considerations, and some countries have long-term care insurance where it will cover these kind of things, but we don't have that in Hong Kong. The private sector, it's quite prohibitive. If you go to agency, you have a 12-hour shift nurse, it's something like $1,500. You know, so if it's 24 hours, it's double that. So clearly, cost is a big issue, and I think this is where insurance could help. But many countries have long-term care insurance, including China, Japan, Korea, and so on,
yeah.
Taiwan. You know, but I think that's going to be a great help to address this current scenario.
How would this insurance system work? I mean, are you saying that it's unrealistic to expect the public healthcare system to afford all of this,
yeah,
and therefore
yeah.
people should have insurance? And if they have insurance, how will it work?
So in the countries that have them, basically throughout your working life, I mean, it depends on contribution, right? I mean, the longer you contribute, the better you are. So some type of individual contribution, government contribution. So there's a pot of money, and then obviously there are various assessments when you need to claim it. So for example, in China, they contribute, and so if you go home and you need care, like nursing care or a therapy, physiotherapy, it's a co-payment system. The government, some of that will be paid for by insurance, and a little bit will be out of pocket. So at least there is some help, as opposed to now we have nothing. This is a principle, general principle. I'm not too sure about the detail, but it works on co-payment and when you need these services, personal care services, okay. It covers it. That is why the home care service in China has developed so fast, a huge network of them, because of this insurance. We, in Hong Kong, we have home care, but it's prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, and only the rich can afford it.
Yeah,
What do you think, Dr. Kwok? Is it time we introduce a long-term care insurance program in Hong Kong too?
Now, of course, we have insurance system in Hong Kong already, but mostly on medical services. And maybe some plans can cover post-recovery disability care, like rehabilitative care, but those would be, I think, would be rare. And in fact, if you talk about insurance plans, the people themselves who had insurance, they have to pay, of course, it's out of their own pocket. They have to pay premium. So if you talk about other insurance plans, maybe plans provided or partly covered by the government, that is different. And now in Hong Kong, basically the medical care, maybe some rehabilitative care provided by the government is the actual insurance provided to the people. So they don't pay. But of course, with this public services, so such a big public service, and the government is already having a very high, you know, annual payout for the healthcare already.
Mm.
So there's always a limitation of services that cannot cover all the need.
Right.
So I think if the insurance, the private insurance care plan can cover some of those disability care, like rehabilitative care, that would be good. But I think still the people still have to pay a price. So it would be more affordable by the wealthy rather than the poor.
Right. Professor Wu, I want to go to another point in your study. Now, as you said earlier, you know, people in Central, for example, you found that 61.8% of the women there are living without any form of disability beyond the age of 65. But when it goes to offshore islands, this dropped to 42.9%. That's less than half. And then for men, it's just over half, 54.3%. Less than half the women in our offshore islands are living disability-free. Is this something to do with access to public health care?
Well, I would imagine that that is one of them, but there are two sides of the coin. If you live in the outlying islands, you could be very healthy and choose to live there. Let's say that's not the case. So let's say when you live there, you're okay. And then the thing is, people get old. The older they get, the less they are willing to move somewhere else. They're used to their village house, they're used to the well and growing vegetables and so on. And I've actually seen people who are really in a very dangerous condition, who've fallen a few times, but refuse to move back to the city. So it could be something like that, unless something catastrophic happens and they're not able to move, they will prefer to live in the environment that they're used to.
Yeah, it's a personal choice. I mean, why shouldn't we respect that?
Yeah, that's right. So when we look after patients, the relatives move them back to the city and they're not happy. So then you would say, well, let them get on and you can just fix whatever environment, make it safe. But unless they have a fracture, they can't move, let them continue doing that, because in a way it's more healthy, right? Because they can move around, they have the space and the air is maybe better. So, yeah, it's a balance.
Right. Well, one of our listeners, Mike, has written, it's an obvious point. He's saying, how do we live longer is up to you, not the government. It's your body. Take care of it, not when you're 70 years old, but take care of it when you're 20 and so on. Dr. Kwok, are Hong Kong people not taking themselves well enough when they're younger?
I would say that the fact that Hong Kong people have the longest life expectancy in the world, that speaks that actually the health of Hong Kong people are in fact very good compared to the rest of the world. So either the people are taking good care of themselves, they're more health aware and they seek medical advice early, and on the other hand, maybe actually the medical care system in Hong Kong actually perform a very good job of keeping the people long living. So I won't say that, yeah.
Okay, so according to the study, some areas are worse off than others, and these tend to be, for example, Cham Shui Po, obviously, you know, a relatively impoverished area, and the density of living condition is worse. Some of the better off areas are up in the new territories, you know. So it's true for both men and women. In Tai Po, for example, is 70.4% are living without disability. How does the density of living condition have to do with this, do you think, Dr. Kwok?
The density of living condition actually reflects the socio-economic level rather than the access to health, because Hong Kong is not a big place and every district got its own major hospital. And of course, you talk about private health services, more concentrated on the Hong Kong island and some in Kowloon, not in new territories. But having said that, although there is a differential in private healthcare institutional facilities in the territory, but everywhere from one place to another place in Hong Kong is a short distance. And I mean, travel is not a problem and access is not a big problem at all. So if you can afford, you can go anywhere, at whatever hospital you'd like to have to go. So access probably is not in terms of the distance where you live, but it actually reflects the socio-economic condition of how much they can pay or they can afford to pay for their health care.
Okay. Professor Wu, okay, affordability is one thing, but why do you think there's a gender difference?
Well, I think if you take into account the whole life course, I mean, if in order to if you look at women, I think many of the older women, the education level is not as high. So this trend is disappearing, but. Education has a very important, throughout the life course, has a very important bearing on cognitive function. So cognitive function, of course, is closely related to physical function. And then women have less muscle than men. So as you get older, age-related changes means that you lose muscle, whatever you do. So in fact, you know, take charge of your own aging, preserve muscle as much as possible with adequate diet and resistance exercise. So women lose, they start off with less muscle, so when they lose it with age, the threshold for functional impairment is going to be much lower. And then you can speculate about what happened during the work life. Were they subjected to stress? Have they been doing two or three jobs, like looking after, raising family, looking after older people? And these are speculations. So I think all these are important. And I just want to backtrack on the living density. Actually, is a very powerful indicator, health indicator, because the census actually collected data on your living area and how many people live in it. So you can work out the density. And density affects a whole lot of things, physical and mental health. For example, Hong Kong U study showed that living density, if it's very high, increases your risk of hypertension. So also you can imagine how it might affect psychological health and so on. So I think, it's a better indicator, socioeconomic indicator, than across districts. Because after all, with urban renewal, you know, there are really very plush buildings going up in coffee shops all over the place. So I think the government routinely collected data should be able to, we could monitor this situation. And if they continue to collect this data, I think then it'll be pretty good.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. I think that both Dr. Kwok and Professor Wu are going to leave us at 9:30 this morning, and we'll be joined by Rebecca Chow, who will be with the Elderly Services Association of